From Tribune Tower, WGN Radio presents A Conversation.
I want to make one thing perfectly clear.
A dialogue.
What are you prepared to do?
An astute debate.
Everything within the law.
And a peek behind the curtain of politics.
And then what are you prepared to do?
I think Chicago is not only the center of the country, I think it's the center of the world.
Don't tread on them.
Where did this statement come from?
This is the Sunday Spin. Your host is the Chicago Tribune's Rick Pearson.
Good Sunday morning, everyone. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, and welcome to this week's edition of the Sunday Spin for March the 26th, 2017, the last Sunday in March. This is our weekly look behind the politics and policies that make or don't make Chicago the state and Washington run. So time to grab the Sunday paper, get that hot cup of coffee, and we'll try to get your day and your week off to a great start. Although kind of a gloomy start there, Schwani. It's everything you've ever wanted on a Sunday morning. It's raining. It's foggy down here.
It's just a carryover from yesterday. I told some friends yesterday if there was any day to just stay in and hibernate, sit, read, sleep, listen to some music, yesterday was the day. And it looks like today could be the
I think today tops that a little bit as well.
We should also mention, Rick, we have a dense fog advisory until 10 this morning for some areas, Boone, DeKalb, Lee, Ogle, and Winnebago counties. A dense fog advisory, that's until 10 this morning. This fog will continue in places overnight, as we reported in the news, and the rain as well. So this is going to be with us for the next maybe 24 to 36 hours or so.
But the temperatures are going to rise up a little bit today.
Yes, mild temps, high near 58. Take that.
That's fine.
A high near 50 tomorrow. So nothing like the record breaker on Friday.
Oh, but wasn't Friday just, what a tease, you know? 81 degrees, I mean, and just people were out all over the place. I mean, it was like, you know, hibernation had ended. And, you know, a real kind of taste of summer until the cold front came in.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah. And what was amazing was that I did have some time to get out during the day on Friday and just savored every minute of it, around 80 degrees. But by 6 o'clock, 6:30 Friday night, it was noticeably chillier.
Oh, I will tell you, I and plus the wind was just ferocious. Mm-hmm. And I was heading off to dinner, and I had my laptop bag with me. And at one point, the wind was so strong that the, well, it was around my shoulder, but the bag was actually in front of me.
The bag was leading
yes,
you.
Yes, the bag was leading the way.
So did they call you a bag man?
Oh, no.
Careful.
No.
Careful.
Stop that. That's
one of us is wearing a wire, sorry.
Yeah, we don't want to use those terms when we're dealing with politics, do we?
Sorry, I just had to slip that in.
Well, and I will tell you, I did get a good night's sleep last night because I didn't have to stay up for the end of the Blackhawks game. Wow. That had to be one of the worst games I've ever seen. And, you know, they've been so hot lately. It's just fantastic, but wow, that was just ugly. No way around it.
It happens sometimes. It happens.
Yeah, and understood. And I'm not saying that this is any precursor for something. In fact, it's probably good just to get it out of your system, you know. And the good news is the Wild lost.
They can't find a win. They've lost 8 of 10.
Yeah, it's amazing. And so we're still 8 points ahead of them.
8 points on Minnesota, 13 on actually 11 now on Anaheim.
So, I mean, we're not there yet, but we're pretty darn close to it. Although, I'm not so sure we're going to get the best in the league for the home advantage for the playoffs.
But you know how that works. Washington has Ovechkin, and you can't spell choke without Ovechkin. Ovechkin has never been past the first round.
That's true. But they also have, you know, they've got TJ Oshie now, too, which makes that team is pretty dynamic. I have to say it's it's not like the teams of the past, I don't think. But and how about Columbus, the Blue Jackets? I mean, after being in obscurity since they got into the league, I think they're third in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, they're tied. They won again yesterday, so they're tied with Pittsburgh now for second.
For second. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. But, yeah, lots of all kinds of hockey coming up, and we do we can get back to the basics with the Blackhawks playing Monday against the Lightning, 6:30 start there on Monday. But, boy, it's amazing how fast the season has gone. Next Sunday, I think, is the last Blackhawks home game.
Yeah, it'll be at 11:30 puck drop, too.
Against the Bruins, mm-hmm. or the Bruns, as they say in Canada. And yeah, that's kind of a nice way to end the season, though, end the home season with a good old-fashioned Original Six kind of matchup.
Believe Doc Emrick will be in the building?
I would expect so. I would expect so. So that'll be just fantastic. NCAA, we're cutting down to the Final Four here, and Gonzaga and the Oregon Ducks already in, and the final two will be decided later today.
Yeah, you got Florida, South Carolina, and North Carolina, Kentucky.
North Carolina, Kentucky is going to be a very interesting game. How are your brackets, by the way, Sam?
My champ is still alive. I've got the Zags.
Do you really?
Mm-hmm.
You picked him to go all the way, didn't
Took
you?
A lot of flack for that. They're too soft. If I had one seed to knock out early, it'd be Gonzaga. Well, guess what? Here we are. First Final Four ever for Gonzaga.
And, of course, I gave you grief because you had the Wildcats losing to Gonzaga in that bracket.
You're not alone, Rick. You're not alone.
but nevertheless, yes. I mean, just some great basketball going on. I am also curious, Sam, Mark Sanchez being signed by the Bears?
Makes no sense.
I don't get it.
Trying to mentor their younger quarterback, Mike Glennon, I would guess, but the long-term
mentor
plan...
Mentor him with what?
The long-term plan at quarterback is not ideal. When you look around the league and you watch football games deep into the season, there's one common denominator: a really good quarterback under center, and the Bears just don't have one.
No, it's well. The good news is we can worry about the Bears months down the road because we've got baseball in a week.
Chris Bryant homered last night.
Really, at home actually for him in Vegas, right?
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic, and so it's the season starts a week from tonight, right?
Yes, opening day on the south side. The Sox are home first. They're home on April 3rd, and then the Cubs opener is on the 10th.
That's at home. But
right, the season starts on April 3rd for Chicago teams.
Yeah, and we're at St. Louis, I think, on Sunday Night Baseball to open the season. So fantastic. See, all that warmth kind of just keeps you looking forward to baseball season and always Blackhawks playoff season.
Yeah, you're right. Sunday the 2nd. That's Cubs and Cardinals.
Yeah, so.
I am wearing my Cubs attire next week as we do the program.
The hoodie? You're going to put the hoodie on?
I'm putting the official hoodie on, yes.
And I think we can put the Zamboni up on blocks, finally. The newsroom Zamboni can be put away.
I am going to look for a new slip and slide for the newsroom as we get into the summer season. We wore the other one out.
Well, we didn't really need the Zamboni much this year.
Not this year, no.
So, well, good. I know some places where we can get that new slip and slide, and maybe or maybe I'll just ask Alexa to order one. How about
there you go. Let's see if she'll respond to that.
I can only imagine. Well, I know the things you ask Alexa up there in the newsroom, too.
Can't talk about that on the air now.
Well, I know how she responds, believe me.
Alexa, yes. Make me a bagel. Swanee, it doesn't work that way.
Zap, you're a bagel. That's
And don't even think about an egg sandwich from the Billy Goat.
Right? No, yes, that's right. They're still working on Alexa. She's still but still being perfected for those kinds of chores.
She will not talk to me anymore. She will not speak.
That's you know what? That would be you would be the kind of person to be the first that Alexa would ban, you know.
So I guess I would be. With my luck, that's the way it works. Yes.
Oh man. Well, It's a great Sunday morning inside here at WGN. I'm here in the Allstate Showcase studio on Asagi, Michigan Avenue here in Tribune Tower. Up ahead, Dave will bring us the 7:30 news, and Sam will bring us up to date on sports. And then we'll be speaking to my Tribune colleague, Bill Ruthart. He's on the political team, and he keeps an eye on the mayor and City Hall. And we'll discuss the story that he and my pal Hal Dardick did about how people kind of trolled for city business using the mayor's private email account. Dave will be back with a news update at 8, and then we'll speak to Democratic State Senator Daniel Biss of Evanston. Senator Biss announced last week that he's running for the Democratic nomination for governor. We'll talk about his campaign strategy and the evolving campaign for governor. Then we're going to have more news at 8:30, and then we'll speak to my friend Brian Bernadoni. Brian's Senior Director of Government Affairs and Public Policy for the Chicago Association of Realtors. And we'll talk about federal tax reform, federal budget issues, and issues of potential concern to homeowners. That's all coming up, but we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to The Sunday Spin on WGN. Good Sunday morning. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune. It's time for our weekly spin through national politics, and what a wild week in national politics. An FBI investigation, Obamacare, a Supreme Court nominee. Let's start with the Republican efforts to repeal and replace Obamacare. Call it Trump Care, call it Ryan Care. Well, you can call it a significant failure for the new administration and for the Republican House that spent 7 years opposing Obamacare. Part of the reason for the failure? The divide among Republicans and a president not fully invested in the bill, but wanting a political victory. Now President Trump says he's willing to let Obamacare just implode on its own and hope the Democrats come to him.
I think we have to let Obamacare go its way for a little while, and we'll see how things go. I'd love to see it do well, but it can't. I mean, it can't. It's not a question of, gee, I hope it does well. I would love it to do well. I want great health care for the people of this nation. But it can't do well. It's imploding, and soon will explode. And it's not going to be pretty. So the Democrats don't want to see that. So they're going to reach out when they're ready. And whenever they're ready, we're ready.
Now, the decision to pull the bill from a floor vote Friday also damaged Republicans in the House and House Speaker Paul Ryan as well. But Ryan isn't facing any real challenge to his leadership at this point. And as for Ryan, he says he was trying to do Democrat supporters of Obamacare a favor with his bill.
Obamacare is the law of the land. It's going to remain the law of the land until it's replaced. We did not have quite the votes to replace this law. And so, we're going to be living with Obamacare for the foreseeable future. I don't know how long it's going to take us to replace this law. My worry is Obamacare is going to be getting even worse. Actually, I think we were probably doing the Democrats a favor. I think we were doing the architects of Obama a favor by passing this law before it gets even worse. Well, I guess that favor is not going to be given to them, and it's going to get worse. And so I don't think the architects of Obamacare, I'm sure they may be pleased right now, but when they see how bad this thing gets, based on all the projections we're being told by the plans that are participating in Obamacare, I don't think they're going to like that either.
So all of that capped off a week which began with FBI Director James Comey revealing that his agency is probing possible ties between the Trump presidential campaign and Russia.
I have been authorized by the Department of Justice to confirm that the FBI, as part of our counterintelligence mission, is investigating the Russian government's efforts to interfere in the 2016 presidential election. And that includes investigating the nature of any links between individuals associated with the Trump campaign and the Russian government, and whether there was any coordination between the campaign and Russia's efforts.
Now, Comey appeared before the House Intelligence Committee, and he was asked about the president's claim that such an investigation smacked of McCarthyism. Here is the FBI director's response.
The president accused Mr. Obama and presumably the FBI of engaging in McCarthyism. As you understand the term McCarthyism, do you think President Obama or the FBI was engaged in such conduct?
I'm not going to try and characterize the tweets themselves. All I can tell you is we have no information that supports them.
Were you engaged in McCarthyism, Director Comey?
Try very hard not to engage in any isms of any kind. Including McCarthyism.
That's FBI Director James Comey. So then you also had the Republican chairman of the Intelligence Committee, Devin Nunes of California, say that intelligence gathering had found some Trump associates speaking to foreign operatives. But Nunes wouldn't say where he got that information. And then he decided to brief the president before briefing his own committee members. Well, Democratic Representative Adam Schiff, the ranking member of the ranking Democrat on that committee, says Nunes' actions make it important to have an independent commission take a look at this issue.
And I think the speaker has to decide, just as well as our own chairman, whether they want a credible investigation being done here, whether they want an investigation that the public can have confidence in. The events of this week are not encouraging. I think anyone watching them has very legitimate and profound concerns about whether this Congress indeed can do a credible investigation. I think that, one of the profound takeaways of the last couple days is we really do need an independent commission here, because the public at the end of the day needs to have confidence that someone has done a thorough investigation untainted by political considerations. It had been my hope. It's still my hope. It may be hope against hope that there's some way that that we can do that. But I have to say, I'm deeply discouraged by this week's events. I think the public is deeply discouraged by this week's events. And I think that what at this point would give the public more confidence than anything else is if we didn't stop what we're doing, but we established a truly independent body, quite separate apart from the Congress, just as we did after 9/11. That the public can say, okay, at least there we can be confident someone is doing an investigation unhampered by political pressures, uninterfered with by the White House or anyone else.
That's Democratic Representative Adam Schiff. Now, the Republican chairman of the committee, Devin Nunes, he's kind of been backtracking on the earlier statements about intelligence gathering and uncovering some kind of connection between Russian operatives and the Trump campaign. But even before the Obamacare replacement bill's failure on Friday and under siege from the Russian allegations, Trump traveled to Louisville, Kentucky last week for yet another campaign-style rally to talk about restoring the nation.
We are Americans and the future belongs to us. The future belongs to you. This is your moment, this is your time, and this, the United States of America, is your country again.
Now, with all that's happened since Trump has become president, presidential historian David Brinkley appeared on CNN and reflected on Trump's first 2 months in office. And this was even prior to the Obamacare debacle. And Brinkley says that the Trump presidency hasn't been pretty.
Normally, you do get a bit of a honeymoon, that you do get a bit of a bounce. And we started seeing that when Donald Trump gave a well-received speech to Congress just a few weeks back. But as Jeffrey was saying, he constantly becomes his own worst enemy. And the fact of the matter, when you start charging Barack Obama of a felony that's unprovable, and the head of the FBI and everybody else has to say it's a lie, that's telling you there's something not right with the person uttering it. That, it's part and parcel to the birther idea that Barack Obama wasn't born in the United States, and you lose all sense of credibility. And it's not just here in the United States where we're having a food fight between Democrats and Republicans. Look at the world looking at Donald Trump right now, watching and seeing that he's being investigated by the FBI for nefarious activities, perhaps, that his own Justice Department's basically saying he's made up a fake felony. So I think it's been difficult few first weeks for Trump, worse than any other president.
That's presidential historian Douglas Brinkley. You're listening to the Sunday Spin on WGN.
Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
312-981-7200 is our phone number. This is your Sunday Spin. I was just out on the WGN Storm Center patio, which is a little soggy this morning as the rain continues to fall, and the fog looks like it's really socking things in. So you might want to check if you're due to fly out of Chicago anywhere today. You might want to check with your airlines. haven't heard of any delays yet, but it never hurts to make a quick check. Also, this past week in Washington, the president's Supreme Court nominee, Neil Gorsuch, he had his Senate confirmation hearings. And during the hearings, he told California Senator Dianne Feinstein that he considered himself to be a fair judge.
Senator, the bottom line, I think, is that I'd like to convey to you, from the bottom of my heart, is that I'm a fair judge. And I think if you ask people in the 10th Circuit, is he a fair judge, you're going to get the answer that you got yesterday from both Senator Bennett and Senator Gardner and from General Katyal, and the same answer you got from Senator Allard and Senator Salazar 10 years ago. And Senator, I can't guarantee you more than that, but I can promise you absolutely nothing less.
Now, the Senate Democrats, by the way, have decided that they will move to try to filibuster that floor vote. It'll be interesting to see if Republicans decide to go what's known as the nuclear option and make that a simple majority vote rather than the 60 votes needed to end a filibuster. Well, joining me now here in the Allstate Showcase studio in Tribune Tower, because we're not here at the Tribune building that often, right?
Yeah, never.
is my good friend Bill Ruthart from the Chicago Tribune's political team. And the reason I say that is because I know how many hours and days you and Hal Dardick worked in pouring through over 2,600 emails for the story that you had last week, dealing with people kind of trolling for business, as it were, using the mayor's private email account. Why don't you give us a little summary of what you guys uncovered?
Well, you know, this is all based out of, as you mentioned, almost 3,000 pages of Rahm Emanuel's emails, which these are from his personal rahmemail.com.
Let's be specific. 2,696 pages of emails.
There you go. These emails, you might recall, were released as part of a settlement between the mayor and the Better Government Association. The settlement came after both the Tribune and the BGA sued the mayor, accusing him of conducting public business on his personal email. The mayor had said that he only uses personal email for political activity, and he always uses government account for public business. Well, it turned out that wasn't exactly the case when all these emails got released. And, you know, anecdotally, as we looked through some of them, we saw a lot of people appearing to lobby the mayor. And so we decided to go through all the emails and take a look at them specifically for potential illegal lobbying activity. And what we found was at least 26 instances in which folks reached out to the mayor trying to influence some sort of action at City Hall without registering to become a lobbyist as required by city statute. And so these folks, 26 different instances, there's pretty stiff penalties for that kind of activity, failing to register as a lobbyist. The instances we looked at could carry almost $14 million in fines. So it's got some folks pretty nervous at City Hall. Some of these folks are veterans, corporate CEOs, people who are registered as federal lobbyists but didn't bother to register in Chicago, having what they probably thought was a back channel way of communicating with the mayor.
A private conversation.
Not on his public government email. So folks may not have thought they needed to register to vote, probably didn't think these emails would see the light of day. If not for the Tribune and the BGA suing the mayor, they certainly wouldn't have. And so that has, put the Chicago Board of Ethics in an interesting situation. This is basically a toothless board historically. It doesn't have any investigative powers, but they are responsible for enforcing the city's ethics law. So suddenly they have this trove of emails, which we've gone through already, and they are taking a look at independently themselves, where they have evidence of potential lobbying violations. And so typically they don't have access to this kind of information.
I was going to say,
they might get a tip every once in a while. Oh, I saw so-and-so talking to an alderman, and I don't think he's a lobbyist. And they might say, hey, are you registered as a lobbyist? Maybe you should do that. Sometimes they'd fine people for registering late, things like that. But if you don't register as a lobbyist, it's $1,000 a day fine for every day you don't register after contacting the alderman or the mayor in this case. And so some of these cases we found go back to 2011, 2012, and could carry fines in excess of $1 million.
Well, and there is that instance involving David Plouffe, who was with the Obama administration, went on to do business for Uber, wasn't it?
Right. Yeah. So when the emails first came out, you know, every media and organization in town did kind of a quick look. And one of the stories that popped out right away was this David Plouffe email. Managed Barack Obama's 2008 presidential campaign, served as a White House senior advisor. And there's this very direct email to the mayor saying, and he's working for Uber at the time, Plouffe was, asking for help with Uber getting their airport pickup business getting going. And so as a result, that one got a lot of attention because David Plouffe is a known name. It was written about, and the Board of Ethics decided to fine Plouffe $90,000. You have 5 days to register after you contact the mayor, and Plouffe didn't register for another 90 business days after his initial contact. Now, Plouffe and Uber both thought that the fine was, quote, absurd. They argued that he only contacted the mayor once during that time period, so he should just have a $1,000 fine for the one time he contacted him. But the Board of Ethics said that's not going to fly because this law, this $1,000 a day fine, is there to be a deterrent from people trying to communicate with government officials without registering. And so they stuck him with the maximum $1,000 a day fine, $90,000 fine. And really that fine is in place so that just as elected officials are required to report their campaign contributions so the public knows where they're getting their money, lobbyists are required to register so that as issues are playing out in real time, say Uber trying to get rideshare legislation or Airbnb trying to get home share legislation, which we also wrote about in this story, the public knows who's trying to influence the government on those companies' behalf. In this case, Plouffe failed to register, and he had to pay that fine. So we took a look at these other instances that we found, these 26 cases, applied the same fine that Plouffe was given by the Board of Ethics, and that's where we came up with this $14 million total.
And there's also, beyond just registering as a lobbyist, too, there's the fact that you also, if you are registered, you're supposed to report your contacts.
Right. So there were a few cases we found where there were folks who were registered as lobbyists, reached out to the mayor, but didn't put in their quarterly activity report. You know, you're supposed to say every person you talk to and about what issue, or at least which office you talk to. And so there was an example, casino magnate Neil Bloom, a well-known billionaire, owns Rivers Casino in Des Plaines. He calls the mayor's deputy mayor, Steve Koch, and says, hey, I want to make sure you guys are against this bill in Springfield that would allow table games at the horse tracks because that's not good for his business. Mayor's office assures him they're against it. So he called about a piece of legislation, wanted to make sure the city was on his side, and then didn't report the contact. It's a much smaller fine, $2,000 up to $2,000. But still, a case where folks who even really knew the rules were registered still weren't reporting their interactions with the government.
And again, doing it in this kind of back channel way.
Right, absolutely.
So what's been the reaction at the Hall?
I think, lobbyists are particularly nervous. This has kind of opened up this can of worms where an ethics board that really hadn't done much before, they're taking action now. Folks are pouring through the emails, searching the emails on our website where, to find out if their names are in them, that kind of thing. It's got them concerned. I think there's some questions as to, how much of this is Rahm Emanuel's responsibility or his office when somebody contacts him. There are some people who are smaller business owners or who had access to the mayor's administration, and maybe they didn't, some people told us that we didn't know what the lobbying law was. Is there a responsibility for the mayor's office to inform those folks that, hey, you make sure you register or, give them a flyer when they come in to meet with the mayor or
whatever. Or that should be the first response, or contact me on my government email.
Well, that also could most definitely be a plausible response, but not one that we saw the mayor make once at all in those 2,696 pages.
We're speaking with my good friend and Tribune colleague Bill Ruthart. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase studio in Tribune Tower on Michigan Avenue, joined here in the studio by my good friend and Tribune colleague Bill Ruthart. We're talking about the investigative reporting that he and our colleague Hal Dardick did in last week's Tribune, going through nearly 2,700 pages of emails that have been released by the mayor's office. There's still some question about where are there other emails, but we'll discuss
the Tribune that. Lawsuit is still in court, and we are still actively pursuing emails. I'll just leave it at that.
Yes, but I'm curious. You know, we're talking about these instances of, you know, potential violations of lobby registration in Chicago in these emails. Give us some kind of an example of what you guys found.
There's one example that's pretty interesting. It had to do with Airbnb. And so at the time, the city was trying to figure out how to deal with this emerging industry, right, where you can, you know, rent your condo out downtown for, you know, a few days a week or whatever.
It's controversial, very controversial.
It's very controversial in some of these neighborhoods, particularly like the Gold Coast, where you have people paying for some really nice homes, and then all of a sudden they've got, you know,
renters,
a bunch of guys coming in for, you know, the Blackhawks playoff game or something, and they're drinking all weekend, and these are, in some cases, million-dollar condos or whatever. So, yeah, the city was trying to get a handle on, you know, how many units can somebody put on Airbnb, how much should they pay in taxes, what kind of deterrence can they put in place to keep neighborhoods and not turn condo buildings into, you know, party centrals on the weekend, that kind of thing. And so Airbnb, of course, their interest was to have as little regulation as possible. And so at the time, Airbnb was facing a really tough law in San Francisco that was going to make it really hard for them to do business, and they wanted to make sure they didn't see something like that here in Chicago. And so in Emmanuel's emails, you see Mark Andreessen reach out to him, who is this tech giant. He was a co-founder of Netscape. He's on the board of Facebook. He's a big-time player in the Silicon Valley. And he's a major investor in Airbnb. And so he obviously has a relationship with the mayor, and he asks him to set up a meeting with the Airbnb CEO to discuss the legislation. Rahm says, no problem. Work with my staff. We'll get something on the calendar. And so in that email Andreessen sent to the mayor, there's also a bunch of internal Airbnb memos that he forwarded to the mayor talking about their concerns about Chicago's legislation, how it wasn't going to be good for their business, that kind of thing. And so there's a meeting that takes place, it appears, and then Andreessen contacts the mayor again later via email, still saying, we're worried about where the legislation's going. And in the same email, he notes that that the company is ready to hire a new Chicago lead consultant for them, or their policy lead for the Midwest. And it's a very good supporter of yours, Rahm. And they don't name the person in the email. And it's even to the point where Andreessen, so yeah, this is tech giant. He's on the board of Facebook. He's got all these things going on. He's literally exchanging emails with the mayor of Chicago asking him, you know, is it okay if our new lead person in the Midwest starts on March 1st? And Rahm says, well, I want to have a phone call to discuss timing, probably not wanting to have the discussion in email. And so it turns out that on March 1st, 4th Ward Alderman Will Burns, a huge supporter of the mayor's, resigns to take a job with Airbnb. So, you know, you have this discussion that, you know, Airbnb is trying to get legislation they like. They're noting that they're going to hire somebody who's supportive of the mayor to shepherd, you know, help maybe perhaps deal with issues in Chicago. And the legislation ultimately passes pretty favorable to Airbnb. There was a lot of critics who thought that the city should have had stricter regulations. At one point, Airbnb was complaining that the regulations were going to be worse than this crackdown law that was proposed in San Francisco, and it certainly didn't end up being that. So that was when we really got to see behind the scenes. And then toward the end, see it play out. And the other interesting thing was toward the end, right before they passed the ordinance, Airbnb was trying to get another meeting, and it seemed like maybe they weren't having much success. So then all of a sudden you see these emails come through from a Mark Kelly. It took us a while to figure out who Mark Kelly was. It's a pretty common name, but it turned out it was the husband of a former Congresswoman Gabby Giffords, and Mark Kelly is a former astronaut. So you're like, why is an astronaut emailing the mayor trying to urge him to take a meeting with Airbnb? But it shows the lengths these companies will go to get in the door. They obviously knew Kelly had a relationship with Emmanuel. Emmanuel recruited his wife, Giffords, to run for Congress when he was head of the DCCC. And so they literally, you know, it shows the importance of this private email account and how people, you know, had access to the mayor and tried, you know, and you don't have to work for Airbnb to potentially be lobbying for Airbnb. And that's the situation Mark Kelly is in. The law says if you reach out to influence on behalf of someone else, which is he was doing here, trying to get the mayor to take a meeting with Airbnb, and the mayor responded, let me think about it, by the way, you know, you have to register as a lobbyist, and the interpretation of the law and some of the experts we've spoken with, that's how they've interpreted it. So we'll be interested to see how the ethics board handles this Airbnb case.
Because Kelly didn't technically work for Airbnb.
But you don't have to under
that's
the law.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So you don't have to be paid by a company or anything like that. And so I think that's – and it's designed to be broad like that for a reason, because there's many different scenarios in which you can try to – influence a government official on behalf of someone else. And sometimes it's because you're somebody like Mark Kelly who has a relationship with the mayor. And, you know, we see this time and again in the emails. It doesn't always qualify as lobbying activity. Sometimes they're just asking the mayor to show up to an event, and that's more of a ministerial duty. But you have a certain amount of juice if you can have a conference in Chicago and the mayor will show up and address your attendees, right? So we see that time and again. The one theme throughout the emails is, I rarely, if ever, I can't even think of an example where I saw kind of a Joe taxpayer, Joe six-pack email.
And every man.
Everybody was a corporate CEO, a huge investor, a major, major player. The only person I can think of that wasn't overly wealthy or something like that, or a real power broker, was Father Flager. But Father Flager has his own set of influence in Chicago in terms of speaking out against violent crime, which has been a huge issue for the mayor. This was an exclusive, we called it a private avenue of influence in our story, and that's certainly what it appeared to be.
Now, there was also the issue involving an airline merger, too.
Yeah, and this shows how, you know, sometimes folks are lobbying the mayor on issues that have very little to do with Chicago city government. In this case, this was back in 2013 when American was trying to merge with U.S. Air. And this was a big deal at the time because the Obama administration, the Justice Department, sued to block this airline merger. They said it was going to be unfair to consumers. And so you see this play out where Emanuel has a couple different meetings with the executives from both airlines and their lobbyists. There's one lobbyist in particular, Daniela Landau, who's this federal, grizzled veteran, Washington lobbyist. And she's trying to convince the mayor and his team for him to sign a letter supporting the merger. And this is a time where they're trying to get the Obama administration to back off and allow it to happen. And so as this plays out, she sends an email to one of Emanuel's top aides saying, I saw Rahm last night at this event. He said he was really upset about the merger. He was flabbergasted by it, something to that effect. And, I want to send this draft letter of in support for him. And so she sends this letter that she wrote, you know, for the mayor. So lobbyist is writing the letter for the mayor in support of the airline merger. And when you look at Emanuel's calendar on the date that she refers to, he only had one event in Washington. It was a non-city evening event in a bar, which is code for fundraiser. And a few days later, he gets a $10,000 check, maximum contribution from Landau's lobbying firm. While he's weighing whether to sign this letter in support of the merger. Turns out he did. Then he goes to Washington, meets at a five-star hotel in Washington with the airline CEOs. And then an hour later, he's in the Oval Office with the president having a meeting, then another meeting with his chief of staff, and then a meeting with Anthony Fox, who is at the time the Secretary of Transportation. So probably discussing this airline merger. And it ultimately went through. The Justice Department reached a deal with US Air and American to allow it go forward. And after the merger went forward, the Emanuel got 10 maximum contributions from 10 executives with American Airlines. So that's the kind of activity that some of these emails show us. There's also, you know, the mayor's official calendar and other public records used to kind of piece this together. And so that's a situation where they're seeking his influence as former White House chief of staff to the president. They know what kind of juice he has in Washington. So really, that's not your typical, what you think about lobbying Chicago City Hall. You're not asking for a zoning change. You're asking for something else. But hey, at the end of the day, when you seek to influence an administrative action, which is what the law states lobbying constitutes, writing a letter in support of a national issue like that certainly could be interpreted to be an administrative action by the mayor.
It's a fascinating story, and I'd encourage you, if you haven't seen it, to go to chicagotribune.com and take a look at that, as well as kind of the aftermath of what the Board of Ethics is weighing here as well.
Yeah, the Board of Ethics, the day after our story ran, said they're going to look into all these issues as they are weighing potential other fines and violations. If you do go to our website, all the emails that we refer to in the story are there for you to read and search yourself. And we've got some videos up there, too, breaking down the lobbying, potential lobbying violations and the interactions with the mayor.
That's Bill Ruthart. He's my good friend and Tribune colleague on the political team at the Tribune. He and Hal Dardick put together this fascinating story off of the back channels of business at Chicago's fifth floor. Thanks so much for joining me this morning.
Good to be on.
We'll be back with more right after this. Up ahead on the Sunday Spin, we'll be talking to State Senator Daniel Biss, Democrat from Evanston, also a Democratic candidate for governor of Illinois. We've gone past 8 o'clock on this Sunday morning. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com.
Now the Sunday Spin continues on 720 WGN. Here's Rick Pearson.
Good Sunday morning and welcome to the second hour of your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune here in the Allstate Showcase studio on a rainy, drizzly, kind of gloomy, foggy Sunday morning, but nevertheless, temperatures will be warming up, although I was disheartened to hear the term thunderstorm potential in Dave's weather forecast, but let's make it a good day anyway. Let's make it a great day. Joining me now on the phone is Democratic State Senator Daniel Biss. He's a Democrat from Evanston, and he's also the latest member of the group looking to take the Democratic nomination for governor. Senator, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me, Rick.
Are you back from Edwardsville or not? I saw you were down in my old neck of the woods in my college days.
I am back from Edwardsville. I'm back up in the Chicago area for a few stops here this weekend, and then we'll be traveling again next week also.
So, I mean, you're only days into this, but you're traveling all over the place. What are you finding out there?
Listen, people all over the state of Illinois are hurting. Bruce Rauner has failed. The state is in a crisis like we haven't seen before. 20 months without a budget. We aren't even sure if schools are going to open in the fall. People are losing access to health care. It is unconscionable. And by the way, at the same time, we're racking up $11 million of debt every day, and people are leaving the state. And so people are tired of what has been done by this failed governor, but they're also tired of what's been done by 30 years of broken politics where political machines and insiders, together with billionaires, are in the room deciding who gets what, and the rest of us are locked out. And so it's time to build a movement to take our state back from billionaires and machine politicians. And that's why I'm running for governor. And what I'm seeing across the state of Illinois is that people are ready for it.
I want to play this clip from Governor Rauner from last week, in which he was asked to kind of assess, you know, his tenure so far. This is Republican Governor Bruce Rauner.
We've done things that are historic, changing the system. But the General Assembly has blocked the other changes that we've advocated. They've blocked term limits. They've blocked fair maps. They've blocked a property tax freeze. All the things to change the system that I've worked so hard to do, they've blocked. So anybody who would say, well, Bruce, now you're the system? I'm not the system. I'm the one fighting to change it, and we've changed it some, but we need to go the rest of the way.
That's Republican Governor Bruce Rauner. Senator Biss, I'd like your thoughts on that.
Well, I have two thoughts. Number one, yes, he has done things that are historic. He has created a historic budget stalemate. He's created the longest period of time in our state's history without a budget, and people are hurting as a result. But the other thing is, you know, he says he's not the system. Come on, man. You've been the governor of Illinois for 2 years. Cut the rhetoric, and let's be honest. Sit down, work together, acknowledge that you're governor, take responsibility, accept accountability, and let's work something out, because the people of Illinois can't take it anymore. I'm running partially because we need to get him out of that office and restore sanity to Illinois, but we also can't wait until I'm governor in 2019 to have a budget. We need a budget today, and he needs to be willing to sit down at the table and stop pointing fingers.
Well, I have a story in today's Chicago Tribune raising the question of whether Governor Rauner and House Speaker Michael Madigan can ever reach any kind of accommodation on a budget deal. And I have to wonder, you know, if it's even possible that we'll have a budget by 2018, if the state can survive that long.
Well, we have to wonder because the last couple of years have not been very encouraging, but we also have to keep trying because you're right. The state can't survive this. The people of Illinois are being hurt by this on a daily basis. And understand, this is not about numbers in a spreadsheet somewhere. This is about children being able to go to school. This is about people being safe in our neighborhoods. This is about access to health care. And this is about a state that is racking up $11 million more of debt every day, which means that when we finally sit down and work something out, it's going to be that much harder to get something done because the hole is going to be that much bigger. We can't afford to wait, and we can't afford to just play a political game until 2019. We need to fix this, and we need to fix it now.
Well, and I wonder, too, I mean, the longer, as everybody knows, the longer it takes to get to a budget, we have this backlog of bills that keeps piling up, $13 billion and rising, and to get out of the hole, obviously you can't get out of it overnight, but to get out of the hole is going to take raising revenue. And the longer we wait, the more revenue that's going to take, which means the higher a tax increase will be.
Yeah, listen, the fundamental problem in our state's budget history is that there was a provision put in the Constitution almost 50 years ago by special interests to make sure the rich wouldn't pay their fair share. And if we really want to fix this, we can't afford to be taxing the middle class more. We can't afford to be taxing the working poor more. In fact, in Illinois, the middle class and the working poor are already overtaxed. What we have to do is create a system by reforming Illinois that allows us to finally, like most states, ask the richest residents, millionaires and billionaires, who've been the beneficiaries of two generations of economic growth, to pay their share to make our state work. And that's something that we've known for a long time, but we've kind of talked around or been scared to take on. I'm running for governor because it's time to fix that once and for all.
Well, I know one of your points in your announcement, you mentioned it as well, about trying to change the Constitution to remove that flat tax prohibition or graduated tax prohibition to accomplish what you want to do. But we've seen efforts before where, one, it's not that easy necessarily to, you know, get a constitutional amendment passed to put on the ballot. And two, on this very issue, there were concerns that, you know, without putting a specific tax rate into the Constitution, which nobody really wants to do, but that would be too, it would be viewed as somewhat onerous in a campaign against such an amendment were it to get on the ballot.
Listen, here's the point that we need to make in the state of Illinois right now. We have one of the most unfair tax systems in the country. We make it harder to be middle class and easier to be very rich than most states. And that's just wrong. And that's because of the way the Constitution is written. And by the way, we're one of only four states that has a constitution like that. If we want to actually fix our budget problems and we want to do it in a way that doesn't punish middle class working families, and we want to do it in a way that enables us to fund schools, to fund healthcare, to fund community colleges and universities, we have no choice but to fix this defect in our Constitution and finally have a fair tax system that asks the people who have been the beneficiaries of economic growth for two generations to pay their share. I'm not saying it's going to be easy. What I'm saying is it's necessary, and it's time for us in Illinois to stop shying away from things when they're necessary but difficult. It's time for us to take on the real problems, sit down, and figure out a way how to solve them.
We're speaking with State Senator Daniel Biss, a Democrat from Evanston and also Democratic candidate for governor. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. And joining me on the phone is Democratic candidate for governor, State Senator from Evanston, State Senator Daniel Biss. Senator, I wanted to ask you, on Friday, we saw one of your rivals for the nomination, Chris Kennedy, put $250,100 into his campaign fund, basically breaking the spending limit, campaign contribution limit and lifting those caps. And, you know, I guess we all kind of knew at some point, given some of the rivals who are either in or considering the nomination, who have a lot more wealth than you do, that those caps would get busted. But I'm not sure I expected it to come this early.
Well, listen, neither did I. And let's start in the beginning. If someone's looking for the wealthiest candidate for governor, I'm not their guy. And if someone's vision of what we need to do to take back the state is to find someone to self-finance their own campaign, I'm not their guy either. What I think we need to take back our state is to decrease the power of the very wealthy, millionaires and billionaires, in our politics, and to decrease the power of political machines in our politics, and to build a people's movement to take our state back. That's what I'm running for governor to do. But to your point, listen, it's his right to put all that money in. I don't think this kind of tremendous amount of money from the very richest people in our state is what's good for our state. And I don't think opening the floodgates to get rid of the only limitation we had on campaign finance reform before, right? So the way this works is contributions were limited. They could only go up to a certain number until Chris put in that $250,000 contribution. That gets rid of all limitations. Well, we need more limits on campaign contributions. We need to do more to make sure that the richest Illinois residents don't have as much power in our campaigns and ordinary people have more power. And so I think it's I think this is not what the state needed, and I think it's too bad. But the rules are the rules, and I certainly respect everyone's right to play by the rules. And in the meantime, I'm going to continue doing what I can do, which is to build the movement that we need to build, which will be more powerful than any amount of money or any political machine.
I know very much of your campaign is focused on trying to create, as you say, a people's movement, and that you know, you need motivated people to come out and support you. I'm just wondering, you know, you talk about how people are angry and frustrated out there, but is that in and of itself really a movement? I mean, people still have to be motivated to vote. I think in your Facebook Live announcement, you talked about people were just kind of demoralized, but with the government that they have. But yeah, how do you switch that into motivation?
That's a really, really great point, Rick. I appreciate that. It's not enough to be angry at... definitely not enough to be demoralized. What we have to do is imagine a new Illinois. What we have to do is, first of all, imagine an Illinois where the political power lies in the hands of ordinary people trying to make their neighborhoods better, rather than in the hands of big money and political machines. And we have to imagine what our state looks like once we've succeeded in doing that, a state where our taxes are fair, where we don't overtax the middle class, where the richest residents pay their share to make our state work, a state where our schools are funded properly. And I don't mean some of our schools. I mean schools in every corner of the state of Illinois are properly funded so that people have an opportunity to have a great public education no matter where they live. A state where access to community college and universities is affordable to absolutely everyone. A state where everyone has access to childcare, because that means that a single parent can go to work, improve their economic situation while knowing that their small child is safe and being prepared to be ready for kindergarten. These are not complicated things, but they're things that we've walked away from in Illinois because of who runs our state and because of who holds political power. We can do better, and the responsibility of this campaign is to help people imagine that better Illinois. And I think once we've taken the frustration and turn it into envisioning what we could be, the ingredients for the movement are absolutely there right before us.
So in essence, just kind of trying to portray a positive future outlook of or possible positive outcomes, which kind of in contrast to kind of the demoralizing message that we hear every day, that's the news of this state.
That's right. And you know what? I pin a lot of this on Bruce Rauner. It's not only that his policies and his leadership style have hurt the state. He's also so focused on telling us what we're doing wrong that he's not really showing us what we could do right. And that's a fundamental failure of leadership. the responsibility of a governor isn't just to diagnose problems. The responsibility of a governor is to help show the people what we can accomplish together. And guess what? We can accomplish a tremendous amount together. Never forget that. Never forget that the state of Illinois is a rich state. Never forget that we have incredible economic activity already going on here. We're an incredibly diverse place. Never forget the riches in Illinois agriculture across our state. Never forget the role we play as a transportation hub for the Midwest. Never forget what that means we could accomplish if only we fixed our politics and allowed ourselves to do what the people of Illinois have always wanted and needed, rather than what billionaires and millionaires and machine politicians have wanted for themselves.
Speaking of, you use the phrase, I was just going to ask this question. You talk about the billionaires and the millionaires, but you also talk about the machine politicians. And as you said in your announcement, that you believe Mike Madigan has been around too long. Do you have to be successful, given the unpopularity of Bruce Rauner, given the apparent unpopularity of the House Speaker, does anybody running for governor have to move to distance themselves from Mike Madigan?
Well, I don't know what anyone running for governor has to do. I know what I always have done and always will do, and that is speak the truth. And our state has done a lot wrong. And it's not just that we have a heartless billionaire governor right now who's driven the state into the ground. It's that we have 30 years of machine politics. And so, yes, I was honest about the fact that Mike Madigan has been there too long. I've been honest about that for a long time, and I'll continue to be honest about the fact that he is too powerful. But the other thing is that we shouldn't get too caught up in one person, because we do have a broken system and we're suffering. People are hurting as a result of that broken system. And if we don't fix the system and focus on getting rid of one person, people aren't going to stop hurting. To make sure that people in Illinois, in every neighborhood, are thriving the way we can, we need to change the way we make decisions so that political power is held by people in neighborhoods, and the politicians in Springfield, when they're wondering, who do I need to be listening to if I want to get reelected? They're not going to be listening to millionaires and billionaires. They're not going to be listening to a political machine. They're going to be listening to people in their neighborhoods who are demanding change. That's what I talk about, what I mean when I talk about building a movement. That's what we have to do if we want to not just change the name of the person who's in charge, but actually change the system that needs to be fixed.
That's Democratic State Senator Daniel Biss, Democrat from Evanston, Democratic candidate for governor. Senator, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Thank you for having me, Rick. I really enjoyed it.
We'll be back with more right after this.
This is the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN. Once again, here's Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune.
Welcome back to the final segment of your Sunday Spin for this Sunday. Glad to report that the rain has now changed to just a little light drizzle, but still pretty foggy out there. Streets are wet, as you heard. Accident on a Kennedy. Just take it easy on this Sunday morning and get your week off to a nice and safe start. Joining me now here in the Allstate Showcase Studios, my good friend Brian Bernadoni. Brian is the Senior Director of Government Affairs and Public Policy for the Chicago Association of Realtors. Brian, thanks so much for joining me this morning.
Thanks for having me.
I know you wanted to offer some condolences.
Yeah.
To
This past week, the public affairs and real estate community was saddened by the sudden loss of Nat Paxson, who worked on public affairs for the House Republicans, BOMA Chicago, and the Realtors. He was a loyal advocate, an honest advocate on our issues. He's not one of those lobbyists we talk about in the industry that are doing things wrong. Nat always did it right. It was a sudden loss. He'll be missed. His father, Kenneth Paxson, works for the Chicago Tribune sports editor. From our family and from the larger real estate and public affairs family to theirs, we express our great condolences on that loss.
And ours as well. Ours as well. I wanted to have you on the show because I know that you've been following events in Washington, particularly on the issue of tax reform. And, you know, it seems kind of interesting to me that now that the Republican efforts to repeal and replace Obamacare have gone by the wayside, the next talk is, well, now we're into tax reform. And, of course, now there's a great deal of question with, given the divisions that existed over Obamacare repeal and replace, whether tax reform is even doable or not.
You know, unlike health care reform, there was a lot of bipartisan work that's already been done on tax reform. And, you know, those are the kinds of things that bring anyone who was watching what's going on a little bit of pause. Clearly what we saw in D.C. this week, and I was in D.C. this week to see some of this, you have a situation where something blows up like this. Well, tax reform has been structured. Both the House Republicans and House Democrats have some similarities about their tax proposals in the past. And the blueprint is pretty clear about what it wants to do. So I think those who want to just throw tax reform underneath the same underneath the same truck as health care reform are probably making at least a short-term tactical mistake.
Because of the advance work.
Yeah, I think there's been a lot of advance work on it. Look, there are three main parts of this tax reform thing that realtors are concerned about. The mortgage interest deduction, which, you get when you buy a home. I mean, it's one of those great enticements to buy a home. 1031 exchanges, which are usually more delegated to larger commercial transactions, but an area that we need to watch. But perhaps most importantly, state and local tax deductibility.
I like the acronym SALT.
Yeah, too much salt is a problem. And I think if you look at the 35 other states across the country that don't have a high property tax reliability, they don't really care about state and local tax deductibility. But if you look at the 15 largest states that produce and rely on a lot of property taxes, that state and local tax deductibility is really important. And it doesn't have to be me telling you that. When you're filling out your income tax, if you itemize, you know how important that state and local tax deductibility is. And that really is on the table.
Well, and I know in some delegations, not necessarily the Illinois delegation, but in other states, that in essence, they view that deductibility is almost some kind of a federal subsidy to high property tax states.
Yeah, that really comes from the Heritage Foundation. The Heritage Foundation has done a really good job of pushing the agenda that if you get rid of state and local tax deductibility, local governments just won't pursue property taxes as part of their mix. The problem with it is it just doesn't disappear. If you take a look at a complex state like Illinois, where property taxes are your main source, not only for pension funding, but more importantly for school education funding, you can't just make that disappear without people feeling an incredible impact. I had the pleasure of being able to talk to Mayor de Blasio out in New York when he was in Chicago, and I asked him a pretty direct question about what's most important to you about all the different levels of tax reform. And strangely, him and Governor Cuomo have one area where they're really on the same page, and it really is the importance of state and local tax deductibility. I think consumers are going to have to take a look at their taxes. I think as a realtor association, we're going to be taking as much of a lead role as possible in reminding people of how important that state and local tax deductibility is. 15 states across the nation are going to get really hit by this, and they're very big populous urban states. And when you remove that amount of deductibility off your taxes, folks are going to feel every bit of every tax increase, which strangely works into the Heritage Foundation argument, which is if folks are really angry, maybe government will stop doing it. But structurally, I think, as Senator Biss said, it's an important part of the whole governmental mix.
You know, it was interesting when I had Senator Peter Roskam, or Representative Peter Roskam, on the show.
Not a senator. Yeah.
No, Congressman Roskam, who is the head of the Tax Policy Committee of the House Ways and Means Committee, which is the tax writing panel. And when I brought up this issue of like state and local tax deductibility, he didn't directly address the question as much as to say what the goal is to basically come up with a system that increases the standard deduction to the point that you wouldn't itemize in some way that would cover everything. And also about the what the national figure is for the number of people who actually do itemize.
Yeah, I think looking at a national figure on this is a real problem. I think you need to go back to the Tip O'Neill axiom that all politics is local, and really take a look at what that local analysis is. You know, one of my favorite ways of approaching this is a pretty simplistic way, but I think it's pretty cut forward, straightforward, that if you take a look at a $250,000 home in Chicago, it's going to pay less than a $250,000 home in suburban Justice or Willow Springs, which is going to pay less than a $250,000 home, for example, in Carroll Streams or Wheaton. That deduction means a lot. For a state and local tax deduction, for folks who don't really understand it, it's actually a deduction that grows over time, because if the value of your home goes up over time, and most homes, you know, barring what happened in 2008, your value of your home goes up. As the value of your home goes up, your assessment goes up. As your assessment goes up, the rate, the value of your tax deduction, your property tax goes up. That's all part of the state and local tax deduction. That increases over time. It's very rare that you see a property tax rate go down.
Unfortunately.
So that value goes up. The mortgage interest deduction, while is equally important, but it reduces over time. So the mix of those two, the mortgage interest deduction and the state and local tax deductibility, are absolutely critical for home ownership and for real estate. Most people don't have diversified portfolios, which are favored very much in the Republican blueprint from a stock standpoint. But most people invest in their homes, and that home investment, that state and local tax deduction, that mortgage interest deduction have long been sacrosanct. And, you know, the times are changing, but it shouldn't change for that part of the investment portfolio of America.
We're speaking with Brian Bernadone, Senior Director of Government Affairs and Public Policy for the Chicago Association of Realtors. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase Studio in Tribune Tower on North Michigan Avenue, joined in studio by Brian Bernadone, Senior Director of Government Affairs and Public Policy for the Chicago Association of Realtors, / Chicago Cubs Wrigley Field historian.
Yeah, this is my favorite time of the year. There's some really good Twitterers out there that are showing what's going on at the ballpark and how the ballpark is getting ready for opening day, which I personally can't wait for.
A very unique opening day.
This is a good one. This is the one that we haven't had at Wrigley Field. The last time the ballpark actually had a World Series pennant raising ceremony was back in 1908 at the old West Side Grounds over on Taylor Street. This is the first time it's ever going to happen at Wrigley Field.
Just amazing. Well, I know you have an event coming up.
Yeah, there's going to be a great event happening over at the Cliff Dwellers Club on March 31st on Friday. The door opens up at 4:30, and the program's going to follow around 6:15. You can go to the Cliff Dwellers website for a little bit more information, but it's going to be a lecture, actually, on the history of Wrigley Field. And I've been giving tours there for 20 years, and it's going to be exciting to share a little bit of my knowledge with some folks over there.
Well, and a lot of knowledge,
yes,
I might add.
I appreciate
as well.
That.
And I think you have also another.
Yeah, it's kind of exciting to be in the Showcase Studio, and it really, people should stop on by even in the rain, but we're across from the beautiful Realtor building here, and that's the building that Bob Newhart, who aren't familiar with it, it's the building that Bob Newhart used to work in when
that
he was
his psychiatrist.
That was his
office.
Psychiatry office, and the Salvation Army is going to be recognizing Bob Newhart at a civic luncheon on Friday, May 12th, 2017, over at the Hilton Chicago, and with Bob Newhart being there, it should be a pretty exciting thing. You can go to SALA or SalvationArmyChicago.org, and you can register there. This is a good event for a really good cause, and Bob Newhart is really a national treasure, and by the way, a great Cub fan.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is. I remember actually seeing his tweets during the World Series.
You can just think about the Abraham Lincoln meeting the PR guy, and those are just some of the great. Hey, Abe, are you using those envelopes we sent you?
Brian, let's go back to the government issues at hand, and I know. One thing that you've expressed concern about is it's known as RLTO, would you explain?
Yeah, the Residential Landlord Tenant Ordinance. We're working a pretty at a pretty good pace right now and reaching out to landlords about an important change to it, where we're going to be changing the word shall to may. It's amazing that judges actually want discretion when they're ruling on cases, and you don't have that within the Chicago RLTO. So we're really excited that Alderman Moore and others are looking to bring this to a hearing, and I believe it's going to happen as soon as June. So I think it's one of those things we want to keep people posted to, but it's an important change, and if you're a landlord, I encourage you to reach out to me, and we can talk about those kind of very, very important changes.
You're also mentioned concern about what you call California creep.
Yeah, California creep isn't a person that you meet out there. California creep is actually when a series of bad legislation starts coming out of California, particularly San Francisco, Seattle, and while Seattle is not California, it comes out of the West Coast. And these kind of ideas start to permeate, and local legislators go, well, this is a really good idea because it worked in San Francisco. Well, anyone who's from Chicago knows that San Francisco is not Chicago. And we've seen some of those things. And I think one of those things that emerged was a thing called rent control. And we have not had rent control in this city since right after World War II. And Will Guzzardi raised the issue, and I think he raised the public debate about this issue about rent control. Housing affordability is very important. But we think rent control is not going to be taken up, at least in this General Assembly. But we know it's an ongoing issue. But we're hopeful that while politicians are looking at fixes like rent control or otherwise to make things work, if we're going to have an affordable city in Chicago, why don't we have an affordable building code? Those are the kind of things I think we need to look at as we start really talking about and dealing with the ramifications of gentrifying neighborhoods and things like that. Chicago needs density and an affordable building code. The combination of those two things, I think, will work. The other thing I think a lot of folks forget is there's a city west of Western, south of Roosevelt Road called Chicago, and there is affordability in those neighborhoods. And I think it's worthwhile not only for people to take a look at those neighborhoods, but we've urged our members, our real estate developers and realtors, to really investigate those neighborhoods, improve those buildings, and make those part of the housing stock of what I believe is the greatest city in the country.
Oh, and we're seeing development in the South Loop, for example, that, you know, how long has it taken for that kind of development to take place there?
Well, it's taken South Loop a long time. It's taken Bronzeville a long time. It's taken Bridgeport a long time. It's, you know, but we need to start looking at our biggest asset that we have in the city, which is land. We still have land in Chicago. You don't have to go that far out of the loop to start realizing that there are great developable neighborhoods that need density. You only need to look at the shrinking South Side as an example. Where we're losing population, and I think a story came out this week talking about population loss. There's opportunities for density, and I think we need to take a look at those. And again, you know, I think going back to what Senator Biss said, you know, we need jobs and job creation, but we also need to admit that there's other places we can develop, and it's not just downtown.
Well, and speaking of community and neighborhoods and those kinds of things, I know one thing, too, as far as the budget gets put together in Washington is
that's community development block grant funds. Right. I mean, the biggest thing, you know, when we talk about the budget items, boy, the thing that scares me the most is CDBG. As you know, I used to run economic development in Taylor Street in Chicago's Little Italy, and those CDBG funds, those are absolutely critical to some of the great work we did at the Roosevelt Ashland Shopping Center, redeveloping the streetscape of Taylor Street. Really making that a great neighborhood to live, work, and play. Losing those funds in neighborhoods that desperately need those funds is going to be a problem as we try to make Chicago a great place. So I am certain our Illinois delegation, not just Democrats, but Republicans, are going to fight for those CDBG funds.
Well, but, I mean, they're important nationally.
To me, I
see that as an item. How realistic that would go away?
Well, you know,
I know it's easy to say that, but I'm
concerned about them. I mean, I think one of the things that was said in the budget briefing was they haven't proven up real well. And I think you've got situations across the country where CDBG funds haven't proven up well, where that investment isn't showing a return on investment. That's sometimes a hard press. Economic development doesn't happen overnight in Chicago. It happens over a series of efforts, a series of things. And And those things take time. At the end of the day, those things take time. And I know they work in Chicago. I know they've worked in Illinois. And again, I hope we take that message to the Hill. I know I'll take that message to the Hill in May.
That's Brian Bernadone, my good friend, Senior Director of Government Affairs and Public Policy for the Chicago Association of Realtors, Cubs historian, as well as noted Sven Gulli fan.
Hey, if anyone is listening that watched Sven Gulli last night, I think you would know that those were some beautiful prints of Dracula. I've never seen him look that good, but you are really seeing a master do his job with Sven Gulli. I think the best work he's ever done in his career is happening right now. I urge people to watch that, watch MeTV on Saturday nights at 9 o'clock and see his program. More importantly, you get to see Abbott and Costello against with the Invisible Man next week. And it really is great stuff. It's great family broadcasting and it's great Chicago broadcasting. I love supporting Chicago legends. And Sven is definitely one of them.
Thanks, Brian, for stopping in this morning.
Thank you.
We'll be back with more right after this. Well, that's all we have time for on this week's edition of the Sunday Spin. I want to thank my guests, Bill Ruthart, State Senator Daniel Biss, and Brian Bernadone. But most of all, I want to thank all of you for listening. And now it's time to turn things over to the great Dean Richards.
How are you, sir?
I'm very good.
Enjoying this beautiful morning?
Yeah, it was really nice to... the weather helped me wake up this morning.
This is the most fabulous radio studio that anyone will ever work in the history of broadcasting. On nice days.
Yeah, on nice days.
On
yes.
days like this, you want to hang yourself in here.
It really, the gloom and...
It's so depressing.
Especially when you think back to Friday afternoon when it was 81 degrees.
Yeah, it was gorgeous. For like 10 minutes, it was gorgeous on Friday. But it's just, it's gloomy, it's cold, it's wet. But I think it's ending. I think it's going to moderate a little bit. So we'll get the updates on the forecast coming up in a little while. Ryan Reynolds and Jake Gyllenhaal to brighten up your day today.
Very good.
So that's coming up in a little while.